You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Go Wild. If you love hunting, fishing, or just like to be outside, Go Wild is the social media destination for you. You can download this app directly to your smartphone or mobile device just by visiting and searching in the Google Play Store. You can also visit timetogowild.com for more information. It's time to get outside and go wild.
Welcome to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, as always. And today I'm doing kind of something different. I'm going to do a year-end review show, and it's just me talking, kind of summarizing the year and where we're at up to this point in 2018. So this will be the last show for 2018, and next year we've got a lot of changes coming up for the Backcountry Rookies Podcast, and we're going to kick that off and with the first Wednesday, January the 2nd. I'm going to kick that off with a show where I have Dan Johnson, who's the owner of the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. And Dan's going to come on, and we're going to talk about some of the changes for the Backcountry Rookies Podcast, as well as some of the changes for the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. So that'll be pretty cool. And we'll kind of get to introduce what 2019 will bring for the podcast. So I'm really looking forward to that, because we do have a few changes coming up, and I think it's going to really be nice for 2019. What I wanted to do today was just kind of wrap up the season, or not necessarily the season, but the year. And I really wanted to touch on some of the hunts that I did, and I'm just going to briefly overview some of those. And then I wanted to touch on the lessons learned, some of the things that I learned throughout the year. Hard lessons, some of them hard lessons, some of them easy lessons, some of them things that I just should have known by listening to the guests that I had on the podcast. But I guess in the heat of the moment, maybe I overlooked some of that great knowledge that was given to me by some of the guests that I had. And then I'll touch just briefly at the end, I'm going to touch on some of the essential pieces of gear that I used throughout the year, and some of the upgrades that I'm going to touch on or try to upgrade to next year. So with that brief intro, let's just jump right into the show. Actually, before I do that, the hunting story giveaway closed yesterday. So I would like to say thank you to all the people that sent in their stories. And I received so many great stories that it was really hard to narrow them down. And what I did was I took those stories and narrowed them down to my favorite top five. And then I sent those out to the team members, the guys that we kind of have built a team around the Backcountry Rookies. And those guys are going to whittle it down to the top three, and then we're going to choose from there. So, so many difficult decisions, but again, I appreciate people that have sent in their stories. A lot of good stuff, a lot of great content to read through, so thank you. And then I'd take a minute, of course, to say thanks to Vortex Optics, Go Hunt, Onyx Maps, Mountain Hunter Box, and Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Thanks for all the prizes that were donated to the giveaway, and I think that really made it a successful giveaway, is having such a great prize package. And we'll see. We're going to try to do it again next year also. We'll see. We'll put together another great prize package and hopefully get a lot more great stories. So thank you. And so with that, let's just jump right into it. Back in April, I started this podcast with my buddy Steve. Some of you guys might remember Steve. He was in the first, I don't know, five or six episodes that we recorded. And unfortunately, we weren't able to keep that going together as a team. We just, both of us had such a wild schedule that it was really hard to get my schedule lined up with Steve's schedule, and then lined up again with whoever the guest was that was coming on the show. And sometimes it was two guests, and oftentimes we were trying to cover four different time zones just to get a show recorded. And then to line that up with with busy schedules, just really difficult. So I continued this Backcountry Rookies podcast on my own, and I've since talked with Steve a little bit here and there, and he had a decent season. He made it out to Colorado and he wasn't successful on his hunt, but he had a great time. And that's good to hear that he was out there and getting it done and was able to keep going with his little journey. So we started that podcast and everything was going really good. And the podcast was going good. And then I got kind of a last minute notification that I was going to have to deploy down into Honduras. And it actually made me a little bit nervous because I didn't know what kind of wireless connectivity or whatever Wi-Fi or internet connection I was going to have while I was down there. So I thought just about as quickly as we got the podcast going, I was going to have to bring it to a screeching halt just because of the, you know, duty calls. When the military says go, I go. And I was very fortunate when I got down there that I had really good internet connection and the, you know, living conditions were such that I was able to keep the podcast going and be able to have some guests. And as soon as I found out that I was going to be deploying down there, I pre-recorded several episodes. So a lot of that early content was pre-recorded. And then I think when I was down there, I recorded maybe four shows, something like that from Honduras. So some of it, you know, a lot of those early shows, there's some tough connection and there's some tough times. And I know I tried to connect with a couple of guests multiple times and just, we weren't able to get it done because I was down there right in the middle of, I guess you'd call it monsoon season in Honduras. And there was a couple nights where I tried to connect with guests and I had no internet to do it because we were just getting hammered with rainstorms, you know. But we made it happen. I never missed an episode and I was able to get everything recorded. So I ended up spending about 5 months down there and getting it done and talking to a lot of guests. So one of the things I did in order to stay ready for the season was when I was prepping to go down to Honduras, I started making phone calls right away. And I called the U.S. Embassy and I was calling the security personnel and the commanders and everybody on the base where I was going to, and I was trying to figure out customs. I wanted to take my bow and arrow down there with me so that I could keep shooting and stay proficient and not lose that skill because, you know, I was really dialed in back in April with my Hoyt. I was shooting really, really good, and it's just something I didn't want to put the bow down and leave it at the house and leave for 5 months and then have to come back to that and try to regain that skill, of course, you know, going into the Colorado hunting season. So I made those necessary phone calls to make sure that I could take my bow through not only, of course, I knew I could take it through U.S. Customs, but I wanted to be able to take it through Honduras Customs and not have any issues on that side. So U.S. Embassy said, good to go. I called the base command and base security and all those folks, and they told me good to go, so I threw the bow in a case and packed all my clothes around it to make sure it would make the journey, and luckily it arrived safe on the other side, and I was able to shoot. I cleared it through the base command, and I had they kind of cut out a little spot of land for me out on, like, kind of on the back side of the base, and I had my own little shooting range set up out there. I pre-ordered a target about a week ahead of time, and I had it shipped down there to me, and so I had everything set up, and it was perfect. So I was able to keep shooting and keep my bow skills dialed in as best I could, and worked out real good. So that was one of those hardships I had to face in the beginning along with that deployment. But anyway, perseverance, right? When you put your mind to something, you'll get it accomplished one way or another, whether it be having to call U.S. embassies and commanders and security personnel in order to get it done. It just takes a little bit of follow through in order to get things done sometimes. So that was one of those difficulties in the beginning, but again, we got it done and everything was good. So, one of the issues that I also had faced was that was supposed to be a 6 month deployment, which would have taken me through the, September elk hunting season, which was when we had planned to hunt. So I had to work that deal since I was given last minute notification, basically last minute. I think I had about 10 days to get ready and get deployed and get down there and start working. I worked out a deal with my command on my end, and they told me since I was taking a last-minute deployment, I could do 5 months, and that would bring me home on September 1st, which got me home about 3 weeks, actually not even, about 2.5 weeks before the Colorado over-the-counter archery season. So that worked out good, except I really felt bad for my wife. As soon as I got home, you know, we spent a lot of time together and we did a couple quick vacation trips and, you know, we did some stuff. But come whatever it was, I think it was September 15th, I loaded up the truck and, you know, so I'm home and 2 weeks later I'm putting all my bags and bow and backpack and everything. I'm throwing it in the truck and I'm heading out to Colorado for 2 weeks. So very, very short turnaround time between redeployment and heading out west to Colorado. And that kind of leads me into the Colorado hunt. We had an absolute awesome time out there, and I'm going to touch on some of the lessons learned from that Colorado hunt here shortly. But ultimately, it ended up being we'll call it unsuccessful hunt as far as putting an animal on the ground. But I the takeaways that I took away from that one experience was there's no way I can call it unsuccessful. I have to absolutely call it a successful hunt. And I got to reconnect with an old friend from back home in Indiana, which is Neil. And you guys have heard from Neil a time or two. He was a guest on the podcast, solo guest, where he came on and we talked about preparation for the elk hunt. And then he was on the Neil and Gus show where they came on and we did kind of a wrap-up of the Colorado hunt. So that was... Like I said, we'll get a lot more into the lessons learned here in a few minutes. But again, I wanted to kind of brief overview of some of the hunts that I did get to go on. So following that Colorado elk hunt, I came home and I don't remember exactly when it was, but I turned around and my wife and I came out to West Texas to see some friends and family. And I was given the opportunity to go on an Awdad sheep hunt. And that was just me running solo, got to bounce around the mountains a little bit. And I had about 3/4 of a day to get out on this one mountain where it's known that there's a herd of Awdad sheep that run around. And I spent the morning kind of glassing the mountains from the bottom. And then I just wasn't seeing anything. So I decided to throw my pack on and head up to the top of the mountain and see what I could find up there. I spent, you know, the late morning into around noon, just scouting around and looking around for any signs of sheep that I could find. And I was just about to have to call it a day and head down the mountain. And I heard a sheep baa from way off. I don't know how I heard it. I guess maybe the wind was right and just whatever. I think I lazed it and it was just about I can't even remember. I want to say it was getting close to a mile away from where I was at. Or I didn't laze it, but I did a line distance on my Onyx hunt map from where I was at to where the sheep were at. And I just kind of dropped what I was doing. I threw everything together really quick from where I was glassing, and I headed out. I was going to chase down these sheep. I saw there was about 7 or 8 of them I could see from where I was at. I got myself within about 300 yards of those sheep. And I set up and I found a really nice ram that I wanted to take a shot on. And I was waiting him out and I took a shot and I just wildly missed the shot, but I really overplayed the wind deflection that I thought I was going to need on that ram. And I just missed him. I mean, he was quartering to me and I aimed, it's just tough to say, but I aimed to the right of his shoulders, thinking that wind was going to blow it right in there into his shoulders. And I was way off. Just, I was in a big hurry, excited, and I took a bad shot. And luckily, I didn't even hit the ram. I totally missed him. And, you know, so there was no injury, no wounded animal. There wasn't anything like that. And had to walk away shaking my head because he was a beautiful, beautiful ram. I shot a Awdad ram a few years back, and he was a pretty good ram. I want to say he was about 28 or 29 inches. I haven't measured it in a long time. there's some pictures of it on my Instagram page, and this ram was definitely bigger than the ram that I had previously shot. So I was pretty bummed out that day. You know, I went home shaking my head and hanging my head, trying to think about what I had done wrong. And what it boiled down to was I had just gotten in a great big hurry, and I biffed that shot. And it happens, you know. It shouldn't have happened, but it did. And luckily, I didn't wound that animal. I'll see him again another day. I get the opportunity to hunt that mountain occasionally, which is really cool. I've got a really good friend. It's a friend of a family member, and that guy he allows me to go out there and chase that sheep around. So we'll see. I'll get to him. I'll get back at him. But so that leads me to my next adventure, which was a second Audad sheep hunt. And I hit the mountain that morning. There's a YouTube video that I have on my Backcountry Rookies YouTube page about this one. And it started out as an Audad sheep hunt, and it ended up as a wild pig hunt. I ended up being able to put two pigs on the ground that morning. The fog was just way too thick for me to be able to hunt Audad sheep that day. There was no way I was going to be able to climb all the way to the top of the mountain and glass anything. Luckily, as I was hiking in to a spot where I was going to sit and wait for the fog to clear, I saw a bunch of hog sign, like bedding areas and rooting areas and things like that. So I set up just sort of on top of that. And as I was sitting there, just kind of waiting for the fog to clear, I was sitting there waiting, and I was sort of like looking up at the mountains, waiting for the fog so I could maybe see Audad moving around up at the top. And then I could overwatch this little rooting area where I'd seen the hog sign. And I saw a couple hogs come in on that. So I decided to ditch my Audad effort and go after the hogs in order to put some meat in my freezer, and shot one of the pigs. And after I'd shot it, you know, the other pig kind of ran off, but within a couple minutes, he kind of came back to see what was going on. And I ended up shooting the other one. So I got two nice pigs on the ground, and we had a barbecue that night at my in-law's house, and I took the rest of it home. Well, I gave them some of the meat, and then I took the rest of the meat home and put it in my freezer. So that turned out to be a pretty successful day, and it did put meat in the freezer, and that made me pretty happy. So, and then the last big hunt that I did was kind of brought to an end due to an emergency that brought me home early, brought me off the mountain early, and then brought me home early. The Army sent me out to Arizona for some schooling that I needed to get done, and it just so happened that schooling lined up with the over-the-counter archery antler deer hunt. So any antler deer, I could have shot a coos deer or a mule deer as long as it was antlered. And I spent about 3 weeks out there. No, I think I had two solid weekends where I could go scouting. And I spent a lot of time in the mountains scouting for deer and looking around for deer. And linked up with a good buddy of mine, went coyote hunting one day, which was a lot of fun. And put a dog on the ground while I was out there doing that. And met up with a new friend of mine I had actually sold him my old Kuyu pack that I had. And then he saw somewhere on my Instagram page or something that I was running around Arizona, and sent me a message and asked me what unit I was hunting in. And I had told him, and he said, man, I'm just right up the road. So linked up with him, and we spent a day scouting together, which was pretty cool. Got to learn a lot from him. So he hunts down there in Southern Arizona. I've never hunted down there before. So I got to learn a lot from Jeremy and hang out with him for the day and get to know him. And that was pretty cool. And we were actually supposed to hunt together the opening day. I didn't end up getting to go hunt with those guys because, like I said, I had something come up that was family-related that was kind of needed my attention, and I really didn't want to get out in the mountain somewhere where I didn't have any kind of signal except for my Garmin, which I'll touch on the Garmin here shortly, but I don't know. I felt comfortable. I knew a spot where I could go and I could hunt that I'd already pre-scouted, and I had cell phone signal out there, and I would be able to stay connected to the family. But I got out there, and I got to hunt for opening day in the evening, and then I went out the next morning as kind of a last effort, hopefully to put something on the ground. And I was watching a group of does and, you know, just kind of hoping that buck was going to come out here shortly, and then to put a stalk on that buck. But about noon, some bird hunter came through there and was on a horse and had a dog, and making all kinds of noise. He was yelling at his dog and shooting birds. And I mean, this guy came through there making more noise than what the army would have made if the army could push through there on a full assault. But I decided at that point I was just going to back out, and I went and headed home. You know, I wanted to get back to Texas and get some things in order. And then my wife and I headed out to where my family was at, to where we kind of wanted to help the family. So, no big deal. Family first, man. That's what's important to me. And, my mind wasn't really in it. I was more thinking about, you know, family and friends and things like that. So I made the decision to come out of the mountain and head back to Texas. So that's what I did. And it kind of ended my season right there for 2018. And all I can say is I am really, really looking forward to the 2019 season. After this year, I just had an absolute blast, and we'll see what happens in 2019. There's been some chatter about maybe a bear hunt in the spring, and then elk. Of course, we're going to try elk again, and we're looking at putting a group of guys together for a elk camp out. Not sure where yet, but we're going to try to put a group of guys together for a good elk camp, and a good group of buddies, and just go out and have a good time, and hopefully put some elk on the ground. But anyway, so that was that. That's kind of my year in review. And then I wanted to touch kind of on lessons that I learned over this year in this, you know, new adventure of hunting in the mountains. And the first thing I'm going to touch on is physical fitness. Obviously, physical fitness is important, but I did learn that elevation change and trying to hike around at 10,000 feet. And not that I won't say I am not in shape. I'm in pretty good shape. The army tells me to stay in shape, so I do, and I run a lot, and I hike a lot, and I, you know, do a lot of resistance exercises, but I just wasn't quite ready for that elevation. It took me a few days to get myself acclimated to it, and so that was one thing I learned was if you think you're in pretty good shape, you might want to push yourself a little bit more and get yourself in a little bit better shape for those mountains. Some people could probably do it. I think there are some people that are probably in shape, but there's just nothing that's going to, if you're in low elevation, there's nothing that's going to acclimate you to those mountains. And I think it's important to get out there a day or two ahead of time and try to get yourself acclimated to that elevation and just try to get yourself ready for those mountains. One thing that I did do that I think helped me a lot was I got out there a day early. And that day that I was early, I went straight to our hunting area, and I got out. It was about 8,500 feet, and I hiked in and just kind of hiked up the mountain up to about 9,500, and put a few miles on my boots and just hiked around the mountain. Although I didn't do anything strenuous, I didn't do anything difficult. I was hiking, and I think that helped me quite a bit, because the next day we went in, I wasn't hurting near as bad. And I was able to keep up and push myself a little bit harder than what I thought I was going to need to. So that acclimation process, I think, is crucial. Another lesson that I learned that I don't know that I really learned this, but I think it's important, is gear preparation. Knowing your gear and how to use your gear is super important. Making sure your pack fits, making sure your boots are right. Knowing that your socks are going to be, they're going to fit inside of your boots and everything's going to work. Knowing about your layering system and how all that stuff works. Onyx Maps is another one, and that's a crucial piece of gear that I used, and I'll talk about that a little bit more here shortly, but just knowing how to use Onyx Maps. If you download it to your phone the day that you're going to your hunting area, it's probably a bad idea. Download that kind of stuff months in advance and use it. Figure out how to use it. Figure out the tools, the mapping tools, how to download your maps and all of that stuff. And it'll be a successful tool for you. But if you don't do that stuff ahead of time, you're not using that app or whatever piece of gear to its full potential. And that goes along with the Garmin. I carry a Garmin InReach Mini, and I started using the Garmin 2 or 3 weeks before I even went to Colorado. And I did that so that I made sure I knew how to connect it to my phone, and I knew how to send a message on it, and I knew how to track my movement and all of that stuff using that piece of gear. I don't think if I would have tried to set all that stuff up the day that I was hitting the trailhead, I just think it would have been a waste of money and you know, a waste of a piece of equipment that's valuable. Gear preparation. I just think it's really important to be able to know that you're comfortable. I can't tell you how many miles I put on a pack. Actually, I started out my year when I went to Honduras. I had a Kuyu pack. I ended up switching over to the XO pack and the XO 3500. I had put, I can't tell you how many miles on that Kuyu pack while I was in Honduras, and I had it fitting right and I had it fitting good. And I made that switch to the XO. As soon as I got home, I started putting weight in that XO pack. And that 2 weeks before I went to Colorado, I was throwing weight in and I was doing 5, 7, 8 mile hikes. My wife and I would go out and find a nice trail and we'd go for a hike, and I would wear my pack everywhere I went because I knew I only had 2 weeks to get that XO pack dialed in the way I wanted it. So I don't think it would have been right if I just loaded up the XO pack and threw all my gear in it and hit the mountain. I was able to really tighten that thing down and fit things right. And I would practice how I was going to pack all my gear into it and make sure that it fit correctly. I have the 3500, and I was working on getting 4 days worth of food, water, gear, you know, tent, sleep system, all of that stuff packed into that 3500. And I did that, I can't tell you, probably 5 times before I went in that 2 week period before I went to Colorado. So I knew exactly where every little piece needed to go. I knew where my tent needed to go, and my tent poles went down the side pocket and kill kit on the bottom of the pack, and where my food bag was going to go, and my layering system. Just kind of, I knew where everything had its perfect little spot in that bag so that it would fit right and fit comfortably. So that's it. Practice with your gear. Whatever you think you're going to do with it, try it out. And if it doesn't work, try a way that does work. And then when you're comfortable with it, keep doing it that way so that you remember how to do it and you know what you're doing. Let's see. How to play the wind was another lesson learned that I had on here. Again, not necessarily a huge lesson learned, because I knew that you have to be able to play the wind, and hunting whitetails in Indiana and just, you know, hunting whitetails in Texas, you kind of understand that if you're sitting in a tree stand or a deer blind or something like that, if the wind's at your back and it's blowing towards where the deer are going to come in, you're never going to get a deer or a pig or whatever it is. So not necessarily learning that you need to play the wind, but learning how to play the wind. And you're not really going to be able to do that until you hit the mountains. You're not going to really learn how to do it right. There was so many times where myself and Gus and Neil were out standing on a mountaintop somewhere, and Gus would be blowing his little wind detector, and it would be going one direction. And, you know, I'd be standing kind of on the other, you know, maybe 15, 20 feet away from him, and I'd be blowing my wind detector, and it would be going the other direction. And that just had to do with the way we were standing on the hillsides and the way the wind was swirling at the tops. And it's really difficult to learn how to play that stuff. I think I went through a whole bottle of wind detector in the 6 days that we were hunting out there. And that was, you know, I was using that thing quite a bit. So it's a really, really good tool. It's something that I will always have in my pack. I always keep one full, and I keep it in my bino harness. Even now, I was just yesterday, I was out coyote hunting, and I had my wind detector out checking the wind and seeing which way the wind detector was blowing, so I could try to play that wind right on them coyotes. Flexibility on hunting areas is another lesson learned that I have written down. And that's nothing more than don't lock yourself into one area. I had scouted out, option A, option B, and option C. And I thought all those, you know, to me, being the rookie elk hunter, I thought they looked like really good spots. And, you know, there was some real dark timber in there. There was some good feeding areas. There was north-facing slopes. There was water supplies. There was all the things that I needed in order to have elk come into those spots. And it turned out we just couldn't turn up elk in those particular spots. It's really good that we had Gus with us, as far as Neil and I having Gus with us, because Gus was kind of pushing us and saying, hey, we went there yesterday. There wasn't anything there. We need to push over to another area. And I want to say we went through I think we went through six different areas in the whole time that we were hunting. And we would just go through and eliminate one. And then if we didn't find anything that day, we were moving on. We were going to a different area, even if it meant, you know, leaving our camp where we were at, going back to the trucks, jumping in the trucks and driving around to the backside of the mountain. You know, we were just moving around and we were just looking and looking and looking. So we had to stay really, really flexible on those areas that we were hunting. I think if it was me and Neil, and Neil and I've talked about this, if it was just him and I without Gus, I don't think we ever would have left that little area we were in. We would have stayed right there on that one section that we hunted, and probably just tried to hammer it out and keep hammering it out. It was cool because we got to see a lot more country. We had a lot more encounters with bulls and cows. And we were into elk just about every day that we were out there hunting. We just could never really seal the deal. So stay flexible. Always know that you're going to need some sort of backup plan when you get out there. And the other thing that I had here as far as lesson learned was food bags. I had way overpacked my food preparation. I want to say I had about 3,600 calories per day, and I was coming home with food every day. So I was way overpacked. I guess I don't know that I just didn't need that many calories to push, because I never really had any problems. I never really bonked or anything like that. And I was still able to eat pretty decent food. I was coming home every day and pitching Gus a Ziploc bag that had, you know, a couple extra honey stingers and stuff in it. Just that's one thing as far as gear preparation that I didn't really do, was try to sustain and do heavy hiking and heavy, you know, stuff like that on the food that I was going to be using. So that was a lesson learned for me. I think next year I can probably back down a honey stinger and just a couple of, you know, pull a couple extra things out of my bag, and I'll be all right. Now, if I was doing multiple hunts in a row and I was going to be gone for 2 or 3 weeks at a time and just really hammering mountains, I could see probably having that 3,600 calories. But next year I'm probably going to try to go on about 2,800, maybe 3,000. That way I don't pack so much food, because it's just extra weight. When you come home with stuff at the end of the day and you've got, you know, half a Ziploc bag full of food, then it's just, you know, you're just carrying extra dead weight. And the final lesson learned, I have this written down as a bonus lesson, and this is, I don't know if it's bonus or not, that's just what I called it, is slow down and focus. That's more for me, but just this could be a takeaway from this podcast for you. I was hunting a lot this year, more than any year in the past, and I think I wasn't really focusing on one single hunt. I was out just, I really wanted to try to get an animal on the ground to make, you know, to be able to have a successful hunt this year where I could talk about it on the podcast and say, man, I put this animal on the ground. And I think a lot of times I was getting in a hurry and I was getting anxious because I really felt like I wasn't going to have a successful season unless I put an animal on the ground. And I think that hurt me a couple of times because I was in such a hurry and almost not necessarily, I won't say frantic is not the right word, but I think I was just really trying to overwork myself because I really, really wanted to put an animal on the ground so that I did have a successful story. And although I did bust up a couple coyotes, you know, and I put a couple pigs on the ground, I wanted that big game animal on the ground, and I didn't get it. And I was talking the other day with my buddy Jeremy Ansel, who's been on the show a few times, and we talked about that. And I think that, like I said, that mindset definitely hurt me. Next year, that's one thing that I'm going to try to do, is just slow down and focus on one or two real good hunts and not just try to chase after everything I can. Just, you know, it's not all about bragging rights, you know. There's a lot of things that I think I could have learned even more this year if I would have just slowed down and focused on the hunts that I did have instead of trying to get in a big hurry and jump from one hunt to the next hunt to the next hunt. So that's my own lesson learned, and that's my own fault. Like I said, I think I was trying to do a lot of that just for the podcast and, you know, to try to I don't know. I guess I just thought maybe if I was successful, it would help this grow a little bit faster. But the fact of the matter is you can't always be successful, and every year is not going to be a successful year. And slow down a little bit and just focus on what opportunities you do have and take advantage of those opportunities. And that's going to make you more successful than anything. So slow down and focus. And that's me talking to myself, definitely. All right, so that's my lessons learned. Hopefully you guys learned a little bit from my mistakes that I made. And yeah, you know, if you've got any lessons learned, I'd sure like to hear about them. Email me, send them to me in an email or anything you want, however you want to get them to me. Send them to me on Instagram, anything like that. But I think we can all learn from other people's mistakes. So last thing I wanted to touch on a little bit was gear. And I'm not going to dig into this too super deep. Just tell you some of the things that I found really, really helpful for me. This year, more comforting gear than anything. And then I'll tell you a couple of the upgrades that I have for next year, which isn't really much. I'm pretty much dialed in all my gear this year. I've been planning for that elk hunt for over a year. So I was, for the whole year, I've been building my gear system, you know, and I'd be testing things. Part of that gear preparation lesson learned I talked about earlier, I would be testing equipment, and if I didn't like it, I would sell it and I would turn around and buy something different to try. And I dialed in my kit pretty good, just a couple upgrades. Anyway, the first thing I have on my list is boots, backpacks, and binos. And you've heard me talk about that on several podcasts. For me, and the way that I like to hunt, and having the opportunities that I do have to hunt West Texas and some of these desert areas where I need to look far, I prefer a really, really good set of binos. And I'm finally up to the point where I have a set of Razor, Vortex Razor 10x42s, and I think they're absolutely fantastic. Those binos will be with me. That's it. That's, I found them. I like them. I'm keeping them. My backpack, I have the XO 3500. That I think I'm going to upgrade next year, but I'm still going to stick with XO. Rumor has it that they have a extra large frame coming out next year. I'm a big guy. I stand about 6'3" or 6'4", depending on the day and if I'm standing tall or hunching over. Anyway, I'm a big dude. And I've also heard rumor that they're going to have a 4,500 pack. So ideally, that's like my perfect pack. If I could have an extra large frame and a 4,500 cubic inch pack, that's perfect. That's where I want to be. So I'm sticking with the same brand. I'm just going to change the pack and try to make it fit my body a little bit better. And then for boots, so I started out the year in a pair of Oboes. I can't remember what they were. I don't know. It's in an old podcast somewhere. Bridgers, I think. Oboes Bridgers. Anyway, they were a really, really good boot. But after I put a couple hundred miles on them, they really started to hurt my ankles. And it was just something about them. They just hurt my ankles, and I didn't really like them. Well, fortunately, I had bought those boots. And here's a little... I don't do pro tips because I'm no pro. I'll tell you, this is a rookie tip. How about that? This is... If you have an REI, it's an outdoor recreation store. If you have an REI in your area, go there and check out their boots. They have a 1-year, no questions asked return policy on their boots. So you could go and try them. And sure, you can try a pair of boots on in the store and walk around in them and you take them home. And a lot of times places will only give you a 30-day guarantee or 30-day return. And even then, you can't really hike outside in them. You know, you have to do stair laps around your house and hope you don't scuff the soles. REI doesn't care, man. You can take them out and you can beat the heck out of those boots and take them back in and say, nope, these just didn't work for me. And you can return them. Fortunately, I'd bought those Oboes before I deployed to Honduras. And I hiked in them a lot. I didn't have any way to return them. So I just kept hiking with them and kept trying them out. And then, you know, whatever it was, I think I had those about 6 or 7 months, and I came home and I returned them because I was having some real ankle problems with those boots. And I had switched in the meantime while I was in Honduras. I had remembered that I had tried on the Salomon 4Ds, the GTX. I had tried those on also when I bought the Oboes, and those Salomons were really, really solid boots. So I returned the Oboes and got a pair of the Salomon 4Ds, and that's what I'm still wearing now. And since then, they've been to Colorado. They've been on every hunt that I talked about earlier. I've had those Salomons on. I haven't had any issues with them. A lot of people say they have some durability issues, but I've been beating mine up pretty good, and they're holding together. So it's a good quality boot for a decent price. So yeah, boots, backpacks, and binos. Oh, with binos, if you're hunting in Colorado, I don't think you need that super high quality pair of binoculars. I think a really good set of Vortex Vipers is all you will ever need, because it's not like you're really looking miles away. You're probably just looking on the next ridge over, and that might be 800 yards, 1,000 yards, 1,200, something like that. Just a decent pair of binos, I think, will get you through in Colorado or some of those areas. Like I said, I chose to upgrade mine because of the fact that I do hunt these desert areas, and a lot of times I can look a long ways away, and if I throw those razors on a tripod, there's not much I can't do with them. I'm real happy with those. I also have rifle and bow written down. I think everybody knows you got to have a decent rifle or bow when you go out and hunt. Doesn't mean you have to upgrade every year. You don't need a new bow every year. I'm hunting right now with a 2015 model Hoyt. You know, it's an older carbon Spider, and that bow shoots great. I do have an upgrade coming this year. I just decided I was going to upgrade to a new carbon bow, and that's the PSE Stealth. I'm going to try that thing out for a little while and see how I like it. I'm not going to get rid of the carbon Spider yet, because I know it shoots good, and I don't know how that Stealth's going to work out. It could be next year that I'm still hunting with that older, that 2015 carbon Spider. We'll see how it goes. But, and then for as far as rifles go, just find something you like to shoot, you know, a rifle that fits you good, and throw a decent scope on it, and you're going to be good to go. I've hunted all kinds of different animals, and I've hunted them with all kinds of different rifles, and I have an old Savage Model 10, I think. Nothing special. It's off the shelf at Walmart, and the only thing I did, it was one of those combo kits, and it came with a piece of crap little Bushnell scope on it, and I changed out the Bushnell scope and put a Vortex Diamondback on it, and I've killed a bunch of different animals with that gun, and I love that gun. It works really, really good. Last year, I was using a 7 mag, which was a Browning X-Bolt, and actually, I probably won't ever buy anything besides a Browning X-Bolt again. That I love that rifle. I had the 7 mags X-Bolt. Now I have a X-Bolt Stalker long range 300 Win Mag, and that thing is absolutely phenomenal. And I'm thinking about getting either a 6.5 Creedmoor or a 7mm 08 in an X-Bolt. I can't imagine needing much else besides any of those. So, like I said, I've been killing stuff with that old Savage Model 10 for a long time, and then kind of found these Brownings, and that's where I'm at now. So, anyway, just get something you're comfortable with, and how about the word confident? That's what you need. You need confidence in whatever weapon it is you're using, whether it be a bow or a rifle or a muzzleloader or a crossbow, traditional bow, doesn't matter, as long as you're confident in it, and that's the important part. And a lot of that plays into practice. So you got to get out and shoot. You got to shoot a lot. I would have never, ever had confidence in my Hoyt if I didn't take that thing to Honduras with me. And I made every effort that I could to be able to take that bow with me when I went down there. I maintained that confidence in it. And I think that was really, really important. With that, another important piece of gear is a cook stove. Personally, I use a Jetboil Zip. My wife bought that for me last Christmas, I guess it was, is when I got that thing. And I've been playing around with it ever since. I absolutely love that Jetboil. I have an MSR Pocket Rocket also. And in fact, there's a YouTube video on the channel comparing the two. I don't know that there's a lot of difference. I mean, physically, there's a lot of difference between the two of them. But you can go on there and you can see that the weight difference is, you know, there's significant weight difference, and cook times is pretty close. You can tell the differences between the two, but I stick with that Jetboil. It's really sturdy. It comes with a little stand on it, and then it kind of locks into the burner, and it's really, really hard to tip that thing over. So I stick with that Jetboil. A lot of guys want to shave 2 or 3 ounces or whatever it is, and they'll go with that Pocket Rocket Mini or a Crux Light, or they'll go with something along that line. I don't know. I like the jet boil, so I stick with it. Next up I have on important gear is layering system. There's no disputing it. There's no doubt about it. A layering system with high quality fabrics is going to get you farther than wearing blue jeans and an old flannel shirt. You know, people say it all the time. Well, my grandpa used to hunt in blue jeans and an old flannel shirt. And of course, grandpa did. And there's no reason why you can't. I was coyote hunting yesterday and in that exact thing, blue jeans and in a flannel shirt with a camo coat over the top of it. And it worked, right? We put a couple coyotes on the ground. But I also wasn't more than 300 to 500 yards from the truck at any point in time. And I wasn't hiking all day. And I wasn't just out there trying to get after it all day. So I think a good quality layering system, you'll find that the comfort that you have in that and the moisture wicking ability is just phenomenal. Find what you like for layering system. Personally, I just got through, when I was in Arizona, I took 5 different base layers out there with me and I tested all 5 pieces pretty extensively. Well, some of them I had tested when I was in, well, I don't know. I used them when I was in Colorado. And then I took a couple of additional to use while I was in Arizona. And between all of those, what I found was I really, really like a merino wool base layer. For me, the synthetic base layers, they just, it seems like they start stinking after the first day. And it's not that the smell really compounds day after day. And ultimately, they just smell so bad you can't hardly wear them. That wasn't the case for me. But they do, they start smelling on that first day, and then it just kind of maintains that smell the whole time. And for me, a merino base layer is just better. Like, I can't seem to get any kind of smell to stay in the merino base layer. So I really like it. If I was hunting in real wet conditions, I would probably go with the synthetic just because it dries out so much faster. In the conditions that I was hunting in Colorado, where it was mostly dry and, you know, I didn't really have any issues, I preferred that merino. And then another piece of gear that I really like, oh, I'm sorry, the merino that I tested was the, I had the First Light, I think it's called the Wilkin top, whatever, it's the half zip, long sleeve. I tested that a lot in Colorado, and I really, really liked that. I tested a piece of Scree, merino, yeah, that was the 2 wool base layers that I tried. Between those two, I prefer the First Light. I prefer the fabric on the Scree. I really, really like the feel of that fabric, but their cut was a little bit weird for me. I had to buy a 2XL. Normally, I wear an extra large in everything that I buy, and I had to buy a 2XL in that Scree, and it still was really short in the torso, and in the sleeves were really long. It was just kind of a weird fit. I think if it fit better, like if the, I don't know, if the size was right for the, you know, if an extra large fit like an extra large and the torso was a little bit longer, I would have, that Scree would have taken it, no problem. But the First Light just fit me right. I'm keeping that First Light long sleeve base layer. And then for synthetics, I preferred the Sitka Core Lightweight, the one with the little hood and then the neck gaiter on it. That's a really, really nice piece of gear. I'll be keeping that. And then I also tried out the Apex hoodie from Sitka. And that thing is, man, you just can't beat that. That's about the best piece of equipment I had. In fact, I could, if it was a little bit chillier conditions, I would probably just wear that Sitka Apex as a base layer. And that would be pretty much it. And then I just have a down jacket or something to put on over it. Anyway, test it out. That's what I had to do. I started out with several different pieces. I figured out what I liked, and then I tried out more pieces, and that's how I kind of narrowed it down. I'm not wearing any one specific brand or anything like that, and next year I'm gonna be super comfortable because I've tried out lots of pieces and I know what I like. The last thing I'm going to touch on is electronic stuff, and that's the Garmin. I use the InReach Mini. I really like that thing. I think my wife really likes that thing because I'm able to communicate with her even when I don't have signal. And I, you know, it's really, really good. I like the Mini because it's small and it's lightweight and it syncs to my phone. And I send text messages through my phone and everything tracks on it, just like a, you know, just like a normal mapping system on your cell phone. It's really easy to use. It's easy to set up. And then they have, of course, you know, multiple different plans, I guess, that you can use. You can do a month to month. I use the Freedom plan, and I choose to do the unlimited messages because I do a lot of texting and everything. I was texting with a lot of people when I was in Colorado and asking questions to people. And, you know, I was just using a lot of text. I prefer that Freedom Unlimited plan. It costs a little bit more, but I can also shut it off and I don't have to worry about it until next year when season starts. And then, of course, OnX. I think everybody's heard about OnX at this point and how fantastic it is. But anytime I step off or anytime I'm getting ready to go out on some sort of hunt or hike, I download the map from that area that I'm going to. And then I have the maps ready. I have the layers that I want downloaded. And I use all the tracking, the map tracking that they have. And I'll track my hikes and how far I've gone. And I do all that stuff through OnX. Pretty unbeatable app, honestly, for the type of hunting that I like to do now. Of course, this backcountry type of stuff, you just can't beat it. I'll go on and do like map recon type stuff or e-scouting, I guess, and I'll plot water holes and, you know, rivers and streams, and I plot areas that I think are good glassing spots, and I preload all that stuff onto those maps. And then when I go out, I just turn on my OnX maps and I pull up that layer that I need and I pull up that particular area that I downloaded, and all of that stuff's already on there. And I can literally walk right to a glassing point because I already had it spot, you know, that spot put on my computer, and it transfers directly over to your phone. Really, really good function, feature, app, whatever you want to call it. Check it out. If you haven't looked at it at this point, just jump in there and take a look. I think they have some sort of free trial where you can play around with it. I highly recommend that. And then upgrades that I'm going to make for next year, there's not a lot. Like I said, this year I had a whole year to kind of plan and prep and try out new stuff. One thing that I'm definitely going to upgrade next year is my shelter. This year I had a North Face, just a two-man, you know, tent, normal, regular camping style tent. And it weighs about a little over 5 pounds, I think. I think I was able to get it under 5 pounds by ditching all the little stuff sacks and all of that kind of stuff. And then I went to some lighter weight stakes and things like that. And I want to say I was right around 4.5 pounds with that. It's kind of big. It's really bulky. So when I put it in the pack in that 3,500, I don't have a lot of room left over after I shove my quilt in there and my sleeping pad and my tent. There's a lot of, that takes up a lot of space. So next year I'm going to try to go with something a little bit smaller. Currently I'm looking at the 6 a.m. Glacier Peak from 6 a.m. Outdoors, and that's a floorless shelter. So I think I'm going to give that a try next year and see how I like it. And then I'll keep that North Face tent if I hunt in like a late season where I think I might need a floor and I just need something with the, you know, a little bit more security from the elements. I'll keep that North Face and I'll use it if I need it. And rain gear. I haven't dealt with rain yet at this point in any of the hunts that I've done, but it's one of those things where if I do have to deal with it, I want to have quality stuff. I started out the year with a set of Frog Tog that was like $20 at Walmart, and it is ultra light. I get it. But it's also very, very hot. I'm sorry, that was one of the problems with it. I put it on and I wore it around just to see. I mean, it wasn't raining or anything, but I wore it just to see kind of how it fit and how it functioned. And that stuff heats up really, really quick, which then you're going to sweat into your base layers. And then when it stops raining and you take all that stuff off, you're going to get cold. And the whole thing just kind of builds from there. I want something ventilated. I want something with some pit zips in it. You know, something really comfortable and quality. Right now I'm using I have a pair of Columbia pants that are, I kind of ditched the Frog Tog and now I started packing this. It's a pair of Columbia pants, which they're super lightweight and they're pretty nice. I may keep those actually, but I need a better jacket. I just have an old rain jacket that I don't even remember what brand it is, but it's just a real lightweight rain jacket, but it gets real hot too. And I want something with pit zips in it so I can dump a lot of heat if I need to. And that's really the upgrades that I have for next year. I'm getting a new bow that I'm going to start working on this spring, and I'm really going to start shooting that thing. And The other upgrade that I have will be more fitness and nutrition type upgrade, and that's personal preference. And you'll hear more about that in the next episode coming up in January. That's it. I think that's my year in review. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I've been hammering away at bringing guests on and try to bring guests on, but I kind of wanted to touch base on what I've learned, even, you know, talking to those guests and hearing what they had to say and then actually putting it into practice and then what I learned this year. So there you go. A little bit of gear review. Anytime you have questions, there's multiple ways you can reach out to me. Or now we're kind of starting to build a team over at the Backcountry Rookies website. Pretty soon you'll see those guys posted up there, and it's everybody's been on the show before. I got Jeremy Ansel as a team member, Jordan Whitlow, and Gus Fletcher. Those guys we're kind of making up the Backcountry Rookies team. And any questions you have, you can email to team@backcountryrookies.com, or of course you can find me on Instagram. Everything, it's Backcountry Rookies. I've got the Backcountry Rookies Facebook page. I also have a Backcountry Rookies Nation, which is a group where you can go on there, and that's more, you know, Backcountry Rookies page is mostly me just posting my stuff. Backcountry Rookies Nation is that it's a group style, so you can go in, you can post in there and ask questions, and, you know, get responses from the guys that are in there currently. I think there's about 250 people in the nation, the Backcountry Rookies Nation. So pretty cool. We're starting to build up a good group of people in there to ask and answer questions. I think I said it, Instagram, Backcountry Rookies. Feel free to direct message me on there if you want to, or if you want to hit me up on Facebook, you can send me a messenger, whatever. My email, my personal one, is jcr@backcountryrookies.com. And I'm willing to answer whatever. Not that I'm super knowledgeable on any of this stuff, but I have tried a lot of gear, and I'm constantly asking questions to other people to get answers. So if you have a question and I can't answer it, I'm going to reach out to somebody in the industry that I think will be able to answer that question. And if it's a good enough topic, I'll try to bring them on for a whole podcast. If not, if I just need to answer a couple of questions, I'll try to get those and get them out. Thanks for listening. I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas and Happy Holiday. And that's it. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.